Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater, I'm doing good. I'm a little soggy, but I'm doing good.
Soggy?
It has been raining here. I mean, if I could figure out what a cubit was, I might start building an ark. Because it just keeps raining and raining and raining. I don't know. We can't. My pool is overflowing. I've had to go out and backwash it 2 days in a row to get it down below the skimmer.
Is it cold rain or is it at least warm rain?
Oh, it dropped the temperature. Last night especially, I got caught in it getting late out of rehearsal. And it came pouring down on me. And man, that rain was cold because it was like 79 degrees when it hit. And it started raining, and the rain was cold. And by the time I got in the car and started driving, the car said it was just 61 out.
Oh, man.
So you it know, dropped.
I just looked. Because I mean, it said, like, oh, I wonder if it's going to come work its way up to me after that. And I looked at the schedule last week or the forecast. I didn't see any rain. But nope, we've got rain Wednesday through Friday and probably Sunday as well. So that's my work week. So I'm going to not make a lot of money this week.
We've had rain since, I think it started Saturday afternoon.
Jeez.
And Friday's supposed to be the first day we don't have rain. And technically we have rain Friday, but it's just supposed to end. It's Friday or Thursday night into Friday morning, supposed to end by like 7 or 8 in the morning.
Man, I really hope this is bad omen because it rained last weekend too. And you know, I've mentioned this before, but like last summer in New York City, we had rain, it was like 13 or 15 weekends in a row. Which, you know, in the service industry, we make the bulk of our money between Friday and Sunday. Like,
right.
You will make the same amount of money working a Friday night as you might make in 2, maybe even 3 days of the weekdays. You will make that much more money. So it really, really sucks to get rained out on your weekends. It's not even just our outdoor seating. It's just people don't come out. People don't drink as much.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, when it rains in the city, I want to be home and... I don't even order takeout because I feel guilty making delivery drivers come out in the rain. I'm just going to get, you know, food stuff from the bodega and a 6-pack and run home. And that's where I'm going to be.
Well, I kind of, in a way, I think, well, I probably shouldn't complain about the rain because, of course, being involved in outdoor theater, the rain is your arch enemy. Mm. So I need it to rain out now so it'll be dry later when we're doing the shows. So.
I don't think that's how rain works. I don't think there's only so much rain up there. And once it's all gone, there's no more rain.
There's an endless source? Is that what you're telling me?
I believe there is some sort of cycle of evaporation and precipitation that we learned about in like elementary school.
Oh, no. Well, it's been so long since I've been in elementary school. I've forgotten.
Yeah.
I probably from a knot I got on my head from falling off my dinosaur riding it to school.
That sounds about right. That happens. There's a lot of people in your generation. Despite the rain, did you have anything delicious to drink this week?
Actually, I didn't. I wanted to fix something, and it just never did happen.
You have a duty to this podcast to try something delicious every week so we can talk about it. You know this is coming.
There was drinking going on all around me. I did see something interesting, though, related to our podcast.
Oh, yeah?
I was looking through Facebook, and here was somebody had this flight of bourbon drinks against the window from the restaurant, or I guess it's not a restaurant, I guess really a bar. And they said, come join us for our bourbon, I don't know, our bourbon delights or something like that. And they had about 4 glasses lined up. And I immediately recognized one of them as a whiskey sour. And then the third one over was a coupe glass. And I thought, well, that looks like a paper plane. Would they make a paper plane around here? Because I've never seen it on a menu at any bar around here. And then I could tell there was something at the bottom of the glass. So I had to zoom in on the picture. Sure enough, there was a little teeny paper plane sitting at the bottom of the glass, I mean, on the, you know, on the bottom of it, not in the drink. Right. Yeah, at the bottom of the stem. So it was sitting on it. So I'm sure that it was a paper plane, but I just found that kind of neat because, you know, had it not been for this podcast, I would have had no idea what that drink was. But when I saw it immediately, I recognized I think that's what it is. And then the paper plane confirmed it for me.
That's awesome.
That's just exciting, you know, that you see those kind of things. And I know we didn't have anything to do with it. I haven't been running a campaign around downtown Huntington to do it, but
I don't know. You're always asking the liquor store for Amaro Nonino. Maybe somebody caught on.
That is true. That is true. I had a conversation with the guy at my Southside place that I go to because he didn't have Nonino or any Amaro at all when I went looking for it a couple weeks ago. And that's what I asked him. I said, don't you have any Amaro? And he goes, what's Amaro? I said, well, it's a style of drink. It's not the brand name.
It's a category. Typically Italian digestif.
No, but if you want to write it down, I can give it to the boss and see if he wants to order it. And I'm like, that's okay. Never mind. I know where to get it. Well, the other one's closer to my office, and they're a real hole in the wall. Why they carry it, I have no idea, because there is nobody that lives in that end of town that's buying a $52 bottle of Amaro.
Well, I mean, speaking of holes in the wall, I had a drink this week that I've not had in a while, and that's been because of the chartreuse. I don't want to call it a shortage. The chartreuse situation that people are taking advantage of, maybe that's a better way to talk about it.
Chartreuse lottery.
Yeah. On Sunday after I get off, Sunday is my Friday because my off days are Monday, Tuesday. So usually I'll stop by, usually I get back to my neighborhood and I go to my nice wine shop and get a bottle of wine or a fun bottle of liquor to play with for my weekend. But there's this Japanese grocery store, a bit of a walk from my job that I wanted to go to. And there was a liquor store not on the same block as it. So I was like, well, I'll just pop in here, you know, I don't have to. Once I get home, I can just go straight home. It was just a little teeny spot. And you know what they had? They had green and yellow chartreuse. The yellow I've seen around, but the green I've not. Even the big liquor store that I go to has not had green chartreuse. And they were not unfairly priced. They were line priced, which, you know, they used to be, the yellow used to be a lot cheaper, but they had them both for $70 a pop, which sounds like a lot, but considering what I've seen those bottles going for, it was not bad.
And especially how versatile that stuff is and the number of drinks you can use it in.
Oh yeah. Well, and I looked at it, I was like, is this real? Is this the price right? I brought it up to the guy and I'm like, are these both? They're both 70. He's like, yeah, both 70. I was like, okay. I'm like, that's, you know, it's kind of hard to find. Like, anyway, like you had two more bottles. Like, should I just buy all four? But I don't want to be greedy. You know, somebody else is going to stumble upon this too. And he said, no, yeah. He was like, we literally get about three bottles of each in once every couple of months. We got these in 3 days ago. You just showed up at the right time. Usually they go. But he was like, yeah, my boss won't really raise the price that high. He knows he could, but he wants people to be able to have it. And I was like, oh man, I can't even get this at my bar. And he was like, well, you're not going to take this to your bar. I was like, oh no, this is for me. Don't worry. It's not taking advantage of it. I'm taking it home. So I made myself a last word the other night and I was like, oh wow, this is what that tastes like. It's been so long.
I know what you mean about the dilemma of should I go back and get the other two bottles and get all four, but then now I'm depriving anyone else of the, you know, exquisiteness of it. So maybe I should, because that place where I get the Nonino, that hole in the wall down by my work, they usually, I've never seen more than three bottles at the most. And a lot of times I'll grab two whenever I go in there just because it goes so fast.
Yeah.
But, when there's only two, I start thinking, man, should I take both of them? Because somebody else must be drinking. Not a lot of people, but somebody else is drinking this stuff. I know they're not making their living off of me.
Well, but if it's something like you can get, because you can get Nonino, there's no shortage of Nonino. If you make them run out of it more often, maybe they'll order more of it.
Well, that's true.
That'll make them go like, oh, wow, we keep selling out of this. We should get more. And then you have a more steady supply. With chartreuse, it's like the guy said, he only gets three bottles every so often of green chartreuse. So I came on the day where they had two of them still remaining. I don't want to be the guy that takes both of them. And then, you know, I mean, I could have been. I was so close.
I bet a month from now, you're going to go hang nose around that place.
Well, I think that will be a spot that I regularly check. Now that I've secured myself, I still can't locate it for my bar. But, you know, to sell spirits in your bar, you've got to actually purchase it from a wholesaler, but mm-hmm. I'd like to maybe try to get on some sort of waiting list. If this little liquor store in the East Village can get it, maybe I can get on the list.
Well, you could get a wholesaler's license and sell it to your bar.
I don't think I could do that. I know. I'm just going to ransom it. Like, listen, boss. I've got one bottle of green chartreuse at my house. What'll it take for you to buy it from me?
I'll raffle it off. And you can be the highest bidder as long as you bid more than $70.
I would rather have paid the $70 to have it on my home shelf and just get to have it.
Whenever. Oh, yeah.
Not whenever I want it, because I don't want to spend that much on liquor. I don't usually spend that much on liquor on a regular basis. So it's like, you know, this was an investment in my own personal back bar.
Yeah. Use it sparingly. One chartreuse drink tonight.
I had the one myself the other night, and I almost made a second one. I thought, no, you know what? I don't want to. It's special. It's meant to be special.
There you go.
Celebrated my victory in having it in my life again. And that's switched over to just gin sours after that. But we're talking about something also pretty special, although not at all hard to find. Sort of continuation of last week's episode, I guess.
Well, yeah, you brought it up in conversation when we were talking about last week's subject, and then you brought up Liquor 43, and I'm like, what? What was that? Liquor 43? I've never heard of that.
Well, we were talking about Tuaca, if anybody hasn't listened, which is a Italian-made kind of vanilla and citrus liqueur that is often compared to Liqueur 43, which is what brought it up. They sort of sit in the same wheelhouse of spirits, have some similar flavors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was not all that familiar with either one. Unlike Tuaca, I have had people ask me for drinks involving Liquor 43, so I was very curious to learn more about it. I actually grabbed a bottle this week as well, and I've been playing around with it. And let me tell you, it's good stuff. So it's definitely worth the investment.
I'm looking forward to trying it. I'm going to try to track one down, hopefully out somewhere around here. The bottle looks vaguely familiar, and in case at home you're want to look it up. Liquor is on it for it. It's just spelled LICOR.
Yeah.
I tried to spell it with a Q and was not getting the result that I wanted.
And it might be about like Liqueur 43. We might be pronouncing it slightly incorrectly with our.
Well, in West Virginia, we say it Liquor 43. Liquor
43. Yeah.
Liquor 43, good buddy.
but you know, I was surprised last week when we were talking about Tuaca how far back it goes in history, that, you know, it dates back to the 15th century. But Liquor 43 has it beat. It goes back much farther, at least the concept of it.
To the Carthaginians.
Yeah. I mean, at least to, like, it was mentioned by the Romans during the Punic Wars, during their conquest of the Carthaginians in, like, 209 BC. But we could safely assume that these people were making it long before that. So
sure. Before the Romans came along and beat on them and then took it from them and told them they couldn't make it.
Yeah, yeah. So the Romans invaded Carthage in 2009 BC during the Punic Wars, the Second Punic War, I think. And at the time, it's the southern part of the Iberian Peninsula. So that's the south of Spain is what we're talking about in modern day. But at the time, it was first civilized by the ancient Semitic Phoenicians, and that's Romans moved in. They were like, wow, look at this beautiful golden sweet liqueur that you all are making. It's so wonderful that we're going to call it Liquor Mirabilis, which means marvelous liquid. But then, despite the loving name, we're also going to ban it.
You can't make it and you can't drink it. Because we don't want you to enjoy yourself. We want you to be miserable. And we know if you drink this, you'll be happy.
You know, conquesting cultures like to destroy the cultural elements that were there before. But a lesson that is often repeated in human history and certain in liquor history is that if you make a certain booze illegal, people will in fact not stop making it. They'll just make it illegally. And such was the case with Marvelous Liquid. The Carthaginian people just continued to pass the recipe down generation to generation, making it at home. So some of the earliest bootleggers
were Carthaginians.
Yes.
They just absolutely facing penalty of death. They would still make their favorite beverage and drink it down in celebration. And they'd be like on Spamalot or Search for the Holy Grail, I guess it was, when they would get up on the tower wall and say, "I fought in your general direction." That's the way they felt about the Romans.
What? Possibly. Probably even.
You don't remember that from the Holy Grail?
Yes, I do remember that. I was trying to figure out what it had to do with the Carthaginian people.
That's the way they felt about the Romans. They would stand on their walls and say, "I fought in your general direction."
I don't think they would have done it quite so prominently, seeing as how they had to make their booze in secret. But it stayed a family recipe for centuries, really all the way up until 1946. When the Zamora family came along. Now, they were already in the distilling business, but sort of son and inheritor of the distillery, Diego Zamora, had this bright idea to bring back this sort of ancient familial liquor recipe. And he was aided with his siblings. It was a family affair. So he had Josefina and Angel, along with Josefina's husband, Emilio Rostoy. And they all kind of worked together at this small distillery to bring back this lost spirit that was located in Cartagena, which is modern day what would have been Carthage.
And the reason that it was called Liquor 43 is it had 43 ingredients. And that's quite a large number of ingredients to put into a drink.
Well, and like many of these recipes that we've talked about, we don't know what those 43 ingredients are.
They keep it a secret. There's things that you can be discerned, you know, yeah. Some common things like citrus and vanilla, and then there's floral herbal things.
Yeah. Well, there's five that they've admitted to, and that's lemon, orange, coriander, and tea of some sort. So, and obviously vanilla, but, outside of that, there's a lot of notes you can pick up on for sure, but the process wise, they take all of their 43 secret ingredients that are all gathered from around the Mediterranean area. So it's all more or less forged locally. It's macerated together for almost a year, something like 8 months, in stainless steel, and then filtered and bottled at 31% alcohol. So it's for as sweet as it is, for the fact that it operates like a liqueur, it's pretty strong spirit wise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's close to being base spirit strength.
Well, they say it's sweet, but it's not like sickeningly sweet or anything like that. You know, it's straight up enough that you could drink it on its own without having to add something to it to modify it.
Yeah. It would definitely be a dessert spirit consumed mm-hmm. straight, but it's not so sweet that it's like trying to drink a glass of simple syrup. You know, it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
And it has a large appeal. It was voted as like the ninth most favorite digestif in the world.
Well, and that was a lot too. There were a couple factors that really made it what it is today, as far as its international presence, you know, so it started, getting in early on that sort of that big, we've talked about this in a lot of spirits, you know, came up with like Aperol and Campari, this sort of recognition in the early 50s of how powerful advertising could be. And Liquor 43 got in on that as well. They invested a lot of monies from the 50s all the way up through the 70s in print ads, in audio ads, commercials, bringing in Spanish artists to do work in their ad campaigns. They were one of the first to organize a brand event. You know, nowadays it's pretty normal to have brands do like activations where they'll host a big party or they'll have some sort of like event that they put on. They, Liquor 43 in the 80s, they like sponsored a ship to participate in the sailing like competition to sail around the world with the name of Liquor 43 attached to it. You know, it's like how today, like a brand will slap itself on a NASCAR car. They were doing this stuff with liquor before it was really normal in the industry.
They were slapping signs on like taxis in that area that would be driving around Liquor 43 cab.
Well, and they were really good at like being aware of the pulse of advertising at the time and appealing to the youth. not just in Spain, but all throughout Europe, and then, you know, all throughout the world. Like, it caught on as just sort of a sexy, fun go-to spirit. In years where other spirits were falling off, they really kind of hit it big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the others that we've talked about, it was like they were big in their area, and yeah, they went out. But this one kind of, you know, it went nationwide, not nationwide, it went worldwide pretty much right away. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like it sat for centuries in that area and then it was discovered. It pretty much was favored out amongst the world for quite a while.
Yeah, well, there's sort of a blessing and a curse to any of the decades that you could have introduced your spirit in. You know, when we talk about like pre-prohibition and prohibition era spirits and cocktailing, like those things were really brought back in the cocktail revolution, but they were lost for a long time. And then a lot of the spirits that came to prominence in like the 70s and the 80s, they kind of had that stink of like the bad years of bartending on them. Mm-hmm. So they were sort of poo-pooed in the 90s and early 2000s. Maybe now they're making a resurgence, but right. This kind of hit a sweet spot where, you know, it didn't get that sort of connection to the old people booze that things right. made before it would have had, but it also didn't get that connection to bad 70s cocktails that would have come after it. It just sort of coasted along, never really having its giant moment, but never really being forgotten. It also really caught on in like South America and Mexico, which helped kind of drive that. Like it became like a mm-hmm. staple in other parts of the world. And yeah, and it's like you said, it's one of the big, it's the number one exported liqueur, not spirit in general, but liqueur from Spain. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest brands in the world.
I think one of the things that helps it too is it pairs so well with coffee, and everybody everywhere drinks coffee in mm-hmm. some form or another. And in most of the drinks that you look up, it is some form of a coffee drink that you're mixing it with. So, you know, as long as people want their caffeine, then, you know, this is a good thing to add to it.
Well, and that's something they've also capitalized on, because they have had bartending competitions, but they've also had barista competitions with their spirit. Mm-hmm. Like they've, you know, seeked out the coffee world to work with their spirit and make coffee cocktails with it. And that's just really smart dual marketing. You know, yeah, we can infiltrate the bartending market, but like, what about baristas? Familiarizing baristas with your spirit and getting into, you know, bars that have strong coffee programs is really smart. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, like some of the popular ways of the of drinking it are like the carajillo, the combination of just coffee and liquor 43. It's specifically liquor 43 is popular in Mexico in general. That can refer to coffee and lots of different liquors, but in Mexico it's almost exclusively liquor 43. There's the barquito, which is a drink hailing from the Canary Islands, which features kind of a layered design of like espresso, liquor 43, and frothed milk. And of course you can just make a Spanish espresso martini with liquor 43 in place of the Euro coffee liqueur. So liquor 43, espresso, vodka.
Well, and then they also have a mini beer that they designed.
Yeah, if you don't want coffee. Yeah.
It's a liquor 43, and then they put espresso and that's not the espresso one.
No.
It's a heavy cream they put on top, right?
Yeah, so it just looks – because the color of the liqueur 43 is just like beautiful golden. Looks like a beer. It kind of has beer color to it. So you put the cream on top – so it looks just like a little teeny beer with a little frothy top, and you take it as a shot. Yeah. And I'm sure that's delicious, because it's delicious on its own, just to add a little bit of cream to it. Well, that's also like there's all of the coffee drinks, and then there's also a lot of drinks that are just like liquor 43 with some measure of dairy product. Like there's a Sandrio, which is another Mexican drink, which is just milk or cream shaken with liquor 43. I guess mm-hmm. you would take the tiny beer and just shake it. That's another drink.
Well, I made a mini Guinness on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah?
Which is kind of the same thing. You'd pour like a shot glass of Kahlua and leave enough room to float a little Bailey's on top. Mm. And so it looks like a Guinness, because it's dark at the bottom and it's got that light tan at the top. And so then you shoot that, but it looks like they call that one a baby Guinness. And this reminded me of the same thing.
Yeah, but you know, just because it's commonly mixed with dairy or coffee, you know, it's commonly used in a lot of what we would consider dessert applications, mm-hmm. does not mean you have to limit to that. Because I've been playing around with it at home, and one of my favorite things that I did with it, which Dad, I think you and your crew would get in on this, is I put it in a porn star build.
Oh yeah, so,
because it has that vanilla note to it, and using mm-hmm. this with some chinola, some vodka, some lime. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's fantastic.
Do you half the chinola and use the other half with the Liqueur 43?
Well, no, because, you know, a usual porn star martini would have vanilla syrup in it. So just did like, you know, like an ounce of chinola, a half ounce of Liqueur 43, 2 ounce vodka, 3/4 lime. Plug it in a spot where you would usually just use something that has vanilla flavor to it can be really good.
I think where it was losing me, see, I wasn't using vanilla. We were getting vanilla vodka.
Yeah.
So the vanilla was already in the vodka, but you could get plain vodka and then add some of this.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, you double up on your vanilla too. But yeah, so it adds a really nice, because there's all those other sort of like earthy spice flavors in the Liqueur 43 mm-hmm. that plays really well with the passion fruit. You know, it brings a lot more to the drink that is otherwise just kind of, the flavor profile is just vanilla and passion fruit. Mm-hmm. Like, this brings a lot more. It almost like has kind of a tiki vibe to it with that. And I love it. Very simple, very good. You can put it in, like I mentioned at the beginning, the cocktail that I'm pretty sure the customer that asked me for it, this was months ago, but a customer asked me for a Spanish margarita, and he explained that it used Liqueur 43 in place of Triple Sec or Cointreau or something like that. And mm-hmm. I made one of those at home, and same, like it was just really nice, maybe a little bit sweeter. Like you could pull back a little bit mm-hmm. on, like maybe do a half ounce instead of 3/4. I also added some orange bitters to bring in a little bit more pronounced orange note, but it was so nice. It was so rich, so flavorful. So it is definitely not just meant for coffee or cream based cocktails. I think it's very applicable to a lot of cocktails.
Well, I'm going to hunt one down at one of our stores, or else I'm going to order one online, because I think that's one that they probably would have readily in stock if I had to order it.
Yeah. I think you could even do it simply in like a Harvey Wallbanger, which usually uses Galliano, which is a very herbal vanilla liqueur. Mm-hmm. I think this with something very strongly like orange flavored would just taste like a dreamsicle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like dreamsicles.
I know you do. So incredibly affordable bottle. I got a liter for like $21, I think.
That's not bad at all.
Big bottle of booze that a little goes a long way for not a lot of money. So I was just very happy with that purchase. I honestly, because of the price and how big of the bottle, I was like, this is not going to be good. I'm not going to like this. It's like, oh no, I like this actually. It's really great.
It doesn't usually follow, does it, that things you like are also well affordable?
Yes and no. You know, so much of the liquor world is dominated by just brand awareness. That's why things like, oh, I don't know, like Jose Cuervo will outsell better tequilas and be able to be priced higher just because people know the name. You know, you can price it higher. The same is true in the liqueur market. You know, you can drive up the price of things like Aperol or Campari because people feel like they need them on their back bar. They are specific spirits or specific drinks. And not to say that those aren't good spirits, but if we got into the nitty gritty of what costs more to make, there's mm-hmm. always a sort of brand awareness inflation that happens. So for these spirits that are a little off the beaten path, they tend to be better price points.
What was the one that had like the tequila that had the little red sombrero on top? So was that Pepe Lopez or something like that?
I don't know about that.
There was one, and it used to, the lid on top had like a little red sombrero on the lid that you opened up. And I figured a lot of people just bought it because of the lid, because it was neat to take that little sombrero off the bottle.
I mean, maybe.
Because it was not good tequila. It was cheap tequila.
No. Well, a lot of what's like, if people just know the name, if they've heard it, they'll buy it. They'll feel safe buying it. You know, sometimes gimmicks like that can sell stuff, but that doesn't always go, I would say it rarely goes one-to-one with the quality. Yeah. So it's always better to do your research, you know.
Well, it's like Corona. It's been judged again and again as one of the worst beers there is, but it's one of the most popular because their advertising is so effective.
Well, I've definitely said this before in Corona's defense, and I will say it again. Corona, I don't think, is actually a bad beer, but so much of its appeal is that clear bottle, and that clear bottle degrades the beer rapidly. Mm-hmm. And that's why Corona's even aware of this, because they have Corona La Familia, which is the big, it's Corona in a brown bottle. You can get mm-hmm. Corona in a brown bottle, and it tastes what Corona's supposed to taste like. That doesn't mean it's like infinitely better, but it is it's definitely better than a clear bottle Corona. So mm-hmm. before you fully pass judgment on Corona, I would try it in the brown bottle because it is better.
Well, that judgment hasn't hurt its sales, though.
No, absolutely not. Well, that's why I don't think they're worried about fixing it, because, well, that's so much of the appeal of the Corona is that clear bottle that makes it look so refreshing, because you mm-hmm. see the beer in there. You see the bubbles. The lime goes so beautifully in there. Like, it's a lot of an aesthetic sell point that I get. It works for them.
And who doesn't want to be at the beach, you know?
Just drink Corona, a nice, promises, clear Corona, yeah.
Yeah, he promises you beach time.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, they got Jimmy Buffett to promote it at first, and then he said, to hell with this, I'm going to make my own beer.
Well, but Landshark also comes in a clear bottle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I don't know. That man knew brand awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Well, but there you go. Here's a, you know, I don't think it's going to blow up, but it is a delicious spirit that's very affordable, a wonderful addition to your back bar that's very approachable, pretty easy to find, I think, like, mm-hmm. you know.
Sounds like it's got pretty wide distribution. It's not like you just have to be in the big cities or something.
No, it's pretty widely known, pretty widely available. And again, not expensive. Like, if it's $21 in New York City, I'm going to assume it's less anywhere else in the world. And they also, like, they're still in operation. They're obviously the same, like, that little distillery grew to like a massive mm-hmm. distilling operation in Cartagena, in modern day Carthage, basically in Spain. But you can go on tours. They have these really awesome tours that you can take of this huge facility where it's made. So it's sort of a tourist attraction now.
And the majority of the board are still family members of that original family that developed it. So they still have, I don't know whether they have entire ownership of it or what, but it's mostly all family.
Yeah. And they have branched out. I have never seen any of the other flavors outside of just the classic, but it's still listed on their website, and so I'm assuming they're still out there. They have a horchata variant, which is vegan. Mm-hmm. They have like an espresso based one. So I guess the coffee is there with it, like a coffee liqueur.
Like some of the others where they just go ahead and make it mixed for you.
Absolutely. And they have a chocolate one too. So there are some more kind of the common flavors that gets mixed with it already. They're already out there. So those would be something to check out if you can find them. I've never seen those other brands out there, but I'm sure they exist.
They wouldn't lie about it on a website. Everything, you can believe everything you read on the internet.
Well, you know, like, lots of liquor brands have tried random things here and there, and then it's kind of phased it out. But I feel like if it's still active on the website, then it's still being actively made.
Yeah, just like Pimm's, they got up to six there or something like that at one point. Now they're down to one.
Yeah. Well, maybe two. They got two.
Got two. Okay.
They got the winter one. but yeah, so check it out if you can find it. Mix it up. If you're familiar with it, or you get a bottle and try it out, please let us know what you do with it, because it's so good.
Yeah, I want to find me a bottle.
Well, if you don't find one before you come up and visit me in a couple of weeks, I'll have it here ready for you.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, any other final thoughts, Dad?
No, it's just, you know, like I say, anytime that you can throw something back to BC, the Carthaginians, man, that is a long-lasting beverage.
Yeah. Yeah. So good that the Romans tried to destroy it. I don't know. That's.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm saying Carthaginians, right? Because it sounds like I'm saying
Carthaginian.
I'm not saying they were cancer.
Carthaginian. yes. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tate, for having me. It was interesting, and I always learned something.
We both learned something today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to reach out to us, you can do that at needthebooscast@gmail.com. You are welcome to join our Patreon if you'd like to support the show. Thank you so much to those of you that do. And if you want to talk about your favorite Liqueur 43 cocktails, you can do that
at Meet the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
Go there, do that. All right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Only thing I could say is, I don't know, I guess that's an original enough name because of the 43 ingredients, but they could have made it a little bit more exotic. It's a liquor with 43 ingredients. I know, let's call it Liquor 43. Hey, that's a great name. It's self-descriptive. Everybody will know what we do.
I mean, I think it's a pretty, I think it describes itself pretty well. I don't know.
Could have been like the flower of Carthage or whatever it is.
Carthage
beverage.
That's not a better name. I don't know, I like Liqueur 43. It's a little, you know, mysterious. It's like 43 what? 43 where?
It reminds me of Love Potion number 9.
Exactly. That's maybe what they're going for.